Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. Isabel and I are speaking from Labour Conference, where we've just heard Keir Starmer's leader's speech. Now, there's a lot to get through, but I think to begin with, let's just hear a few of the interruptions that Keir Starmer probably would have liked to have avoided. Isabel, we knew this was going to be a difficult event for Keir Starmer. Last time around, his first conference speech, it was done remotely. He didn't need to worry about ultimately boos in the hall from delegates who are unhappy. And there's a lot of pressure on Keir Starmer too to set out his vision and who he was. How do you think being physically there impacted things?
Well, the most obvious answer to that is that it gave people who don't like him the opportunity to heckle him, because you can't heckle somebody over a virtual live stream. And I think it's fair to say that they actually really helped Keir Starmer. He'd obviously prepared lines for there to be heckles, and not just the sort of, oh, Jeremy Corbyn that we heard at the start of his speech, but what delegates were focusing on was shouting £15 an hour, which is this minimum wage commitment that he hasn't made, that apparently prompted Andy MacDonald's resignation. But he had lines prepared for that as well. So initially he said, at this time on a Wednesday, it's normally the Tories who are heckling me. Then his most effective riposte, which gained him two standing ovations, was him saying, shouting slogans or changing lives conference, in response to one woman who was repeatedly shouting from the middle of the room. And some of these heckles came when he was talking about his mother being seriously ill in intensive care, which I think really had anyone had any sympathy for those people, that quickly evaporated, and people in the conference hall were basically turning on those hecklers and shouting, shame on you. He'd obviously prepared the shape of his speech for heckles as well, on the assumption that proved to be correct, that they would run out of steam by the middle. And so the first half was about Keir the man, about his father the toolmaker, about his mother's illness, about what shaped his politics and how he saw the world. And then it moved on to policy announcements and his statements about what Labour should stand for and what sort of country Britain should become. Now, the problem with the speech was that it, even with the 17, I think, standing ovations that he received and all of the heckling, it was very, very long. And so there's quite a lot to digest from it, which means that I'm not sure there's anything in particular that stands out other than the heckling. But I think the most interesting policy announcement from it was his promise that under Labour, anyone needing mental health support would have less than a month to wait, which is hugely ambitious given the waiting times that some people are having at the moment of well over a year, particularly in child and adolescent mental health services. And it takes a long time to train up the 8,500 staff that he said a Labour government would recruit. But, you know, why not be ambitious when in opposition, particularly on a topic that is becoming more and more prevalent in politics?
James, what stood out to you?
I thought the hecklers actually helped him. I thought they were a sign that you know, Keir Starmer might say Labour is under new management. I thought the fact he took them on quite effectively, said, your heckles don't bother me any more than when the Tories heckle me at PMQs. I thought that worked quite well for him. I also thought that, yes, the speech was long, but that allowed him to tick a lot of boxes. He got the Labour Party conference to applaud patriotism, the NATO alliance, all of these things that make a symbolic departure from the Corbyn era. And I also thought that the embrace of New Labour and the New Labour record was stronger than we have seen from any Labour leader since the party lost power in 2010. I mean, the interesting thing about this, because at this point in the cycle for an opposition, it doesn't need more policy, but it needs a frame. And I thought the most interesting thing was the way he attempts to frame the fight against Boris Johnson. He said, you know, in kind of clear contrast to Angela Rayner, he said, he's not a bad man, but he's a trivial man. And I mean, this is interesting. I mean, this, you know, Deborah Mattinson, the famous pollster, is now working for the Starmer operation. And I mean, this was a clear attempt to kind of reflect back to focus groups some of the concerns that some of the voters you write about in the magazine this week, Katie, you know, people who shifted from in historically Labour seats for Tories in 2019 begin to have. And I think it probably is the cleverest way to attack Boris Johnson, especially at the moment, given the petrol crisis.
And Isabel, we also heard a lot about tools, both in reference to Boris Johnson. I think actually one of the cheekiest jokes in that speech was when Keir Starmer said that his father was a toolmaker and then said, well, in a way, Boris Johnson's father was too, which I thought I'd misheard at first. But he did keep returning to the theme of his father's profession, how that had influenced him, and even, you know, went up into a larger theme at the end of his speech. So is that going to be in defining Starmerism? Is it now about tools?
About tools.
I think it worked as a way of introducing him as a person and as a way of making Labour... But don't forget, Labour's roots is, you know, it's very much a party of people who were tool makers and other manual occupations. And I think sort of a nod to Labour's heritage, but also his excitement, I think, about technology of the future was quite palpable when he talked about the first hydrogen wing, and he talked about robots being used in surgery to ensure that surgeons made the most precise incisions and so on. I think that worked. So it wasn't just a sort of nostalgic thing that you often hear sort of on Labour fringes about working class pride. It was actually about tools and technology and about how Britain can look to the future with positivity, which is something that he wants to do more and more of, rather than being so negative as Corbyn and particularly Ed Miliband were about the state of Britain. He was much more negative about the state of the government, I think, rather than painting Britain as this sort of place that's crumbling. And I thought that was quite effective. How long he can sustain the "these are the tools of my trade and with them I will go to work," which was his final liner, I'm not entirely sure, without him sort of being caricatured as a sort of Bob the Builder figure. But maybe he'd like that. You know, it's not the worst. Labour leaders have been caricatured as worse before.
And James, one other big aspect of the speech came to Keir Starmer's profession previously, and looking at the cases he'd brought, you had Doreen Lawrence presenting him, talking about her late son Stephen Lawrence, and you could see it building into a larger theme where Keir Starmer talked about the fact that when it comes to law and order, when it comes to justice, that is the party for Labour. Do you think that was effective?
Yeah, I think one of the obvious things for Starmer to do is to use his background as what he called himself, you know, the chief prosecutor, to pitch Labour as, you know, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime, and cause the Tories some difficulty there. You know, I think there are clearly problems in the criminal justice system. People are more worried about antisocial behaviour than they were. I think people are more worried about online fraud than they were. And so I think that you can see that. And I think also, you can use his tenure at the CPS to reassure people that he has some experience running a large organisation. Now, I think his record at the CPS is perhaps slightly more mixed than he suggests there, but I thought it was an effective bit of the speech. I think he needs to introduce himself to voters more. I think one consequence of COVID, which kind of elbowed him out of the national conversation so abruptly, is that voters really don't know much about Keir Starmer. And getting voters to take a second look at you, which he does need to do if you look at his ratings, you know, is one of the hardest things in politics to achieve. And so I think he does need to find ways to talk about himself that make him more compelling than he has been to date. And I thought in this speech you've begun to see how he might do that.
Now, Isabel, the other thing that was striking about the speech was its length. It was a rather long speech. Now, there are various accounts of why it took so long as it did. I think the heckling played a role. Did you think that it meant at points it lagged in places, or did actually Keir Starmer need that space because it'd been so long since he'd had this opportunity?
Yeah, I do take James's point that it gave him the space to unpack a lot of different things, including, you know, getting the party conference to applaud troops and so on. But I do think there could have been some editing that would have made it a little bit tighter. It felt, certainly to us in the hall, as though it was wandering a bit in the middle. And I think it could have been cut just before he went into the policy announcements about the NHS. And then again, a little bit later, he started wandering again before he then started tightening up what he meant about British values and, you know, a conference that applauds patriotism and so on. But, you know, I guess if you're going to try to introduce yourself to a party that hasn't actually met you in person, then I can understand why you'd want to go long. But I do think it was a little bit wearing at times. Maybe that's just because we've all been, you know, at Labour conference for too long. I'm not sure.
And James, Isabel and I have been covering the conference in Brighton, and it's meant that we've had you to tell us what's actually making the evening news and what we're just seeing from being here. And by all accounts, some of the top lines in this conference aren't the ones that Keir Starmer's team would want. If you look at, you know, resignations, trans row, things like this. Do you think that this is going to actually get them that 10 o'clock bulletin they'll want?
I thought this was... today has been... I mean, famous last words as we're recording it. 2 o'clock and lots could happen. But I think today has been the best day of Labour conference so far for Keir Starmer, because... Jack Straw and Noel saying that the safest place for any minister in a crisis is a dispatch box, House of Commons. And in some ways, the fact that Starmer was at the conference podium meant that he could take on those hecklers directly. And I think the hecklers, it became more apparent that they are not interested in kind of pushing Labour slightly in a more leftward policy direction, but that they want Keir Starmer to fail. And I think that helped Keir Starmer win the audience in the hall over to him. And I think that, you know, and I think in terms of the public, at this point in the actual cycle, the idea that Starmer is moving Labour away from the Corbynite past at such a speed that some people in the Labour Party don't like it is, I think, a net plus to him. I think that becomes more difficult the closer you get to a general election, when people think, oh, what if they've got a small majority? I don't like the idea of him being held hostage by those MPs. But I think at the moment, I think this is a net plus for him. And I think, look, it's very easy for me to say who is sitting in London watching the speech rather than in the hall in an uncomfortable chair. But I think in a way, the length thing is not that much of a problem for him, because, you know, the only way most people will see this is the odd clip or two on the, you know, if at all, is the odd clip or two on the news or on the radio bulletin. And I think the way he dealt with the hecklers will be one of the clips that gets picked out. I think that will be a net plus for him.
And Isabel, we're now at the end of Labour conference. Do you think Keir Starmer has come out in a stronger position than how he was when it began?
I think ultimately he has, actually. The week hasn't necessarily gone to plan. He didn't get all of the rule changes he'd wanted, although I think that was partly a dysfunction of his operation in briefing, you know, sympathetic writers and opinion forms and so on, that the rule changes he really wanted were to do with the threshold of MP support for electing a leader, rather than the move to one member, one vote. It sounds like some delegates are still enjoying themselves in the background by playing Shania Twain, presumably about Jeremy Corbyn, I don't know. But I think that he got a rule change in the end. He also, bizarrely, I don't think a shadow cabinet resignation of Andy MacDonald is a bad thing in the long run, because he's not somebody who sees eye to eye with Starmer, is a Corbynite, you know, was welcomed like a hero by the Corbynites at their parallel festival that they're running, The World Transformed. And he's managed to give a speech where, you know, he visibly faced down his critics in the party and had a lot of support from the floor. So I think, on balance, it's been a good week for him. I don't think it's been a perfect week, or the week where Labour's fortunes turned around, but I think it's been a week that's made some foundations for the future. And that's the interesting thing about this conference, is the number of people who you talk to privately who are in the shadow cabinet, and you mentioned this in your politics column last week, Katie, that actually most of them are talking about a 10-year project here rather than the next election. And so if you're sort of already factoring in losing the next election and somebody else sensible coming in, then things have gone quite well. That's probably not that cheery for Keir Starmer, but the project of recovery for Labour, I think, is still on track.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.